It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, David Widmar, with Agricultural Economic Insights. He'll join us in just a moment. You know, you really need to be practicing good habits to avoid BRD in a herd. Greg Hanselcheck is a K-State veterinarian.
We've had several herds that routinely, if they had a calf that died from dystocia or neonatal scours, they would go to a neighbor or they would go to the sale barn, purchase a calf, graft it on the cows. We know that's a biosecurity risk. And once those herds stop doing that, it may be anecdotal. It may just be the way it is. But those herds, several herds that I can think of actually had no problems after that, after they quit bringing in outside calves. That's our recommendation, is biosecurity and then working trying to reduce the exposure of the calves, so which means biosecurity, smaller groups, less concentration.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by David Widmar. David is with Agricultural Economic Insights. They're online at AEI.ag. That's AEI.ag, and we'll talk more about the website and Agricultural Economic Insights in just a moment. But David, as we start our conversation, you know, there are a couple of things that I think are really top of mind. One of those is kind of that inflation, interest rates, that discussion. And I'd like to come back and talk about that in a moment. But first, can we tee up China? And just the trade relationship. Man, we are in a much different place than we were, let's say, 4 years ago, aren't we?
We're in, you know, new territory across the board. And, you know, I think the headlines for 2021 in China's purchases of U.S. ag products is dominated by failed to meet the Phase 1 trade agreement. You know, we haven't heard about the Phase 1 trade agreement in quite a while. I'm not sure where that fits into the broader narrative of where we are here in the going into the summer of 2022. But the reality here is China purchased a record amount of goods and services from the U.S., of ag goods and services, about $36 billion worth in 2021. That's about $7 billion or 25% higher than the year before and about the same from the record that we set almost a decade ago. And so what we saw during the trade war is activity fell significantly, somewhere around $14 billion. During 2020, we got back to sort of pre-trade war highs, and then we set a whole new level here. And as we've dug into that total, there are two commodities that stand out for really driving that $7 billion in new purchases. It's beef and corn. And while those two might not surprise you, the magnitude of purchases that we saw of those two commodities is, you know, pretty unbelievable. So a little context here. China purchased about $6.7 billion worth of U.S. beef and corn in 2021. If you add up the 11 preceding years of beef and corn purchases, you get to about $5.5 billion. So they purchased more in 2021 of those two commodities than they had purchased in the 11 preceding years altogether. And so the rapid change and the magnitude here of what we've seen, it's pretty remarkable.
You know, at one point, and now I'm just talking about beef, but I'm sure we could apply this to corn as well. At one point, the amount of beef being purchased from the U.S. by the Chinese was just a small percentage of the actual purchases or imports. Have we, as we've grown our exports into that Chinese market, are we gaining more market share?
There are several things going on there, and that's a really great question, Tony. And, you know, one thing that's going on is China's consumers are purchasing more beef. And so that's been playing out for a few years now. The U.S. has been a very, very small market share. And so we're seeing the market grow, the pie is expanding. The U.S. is now growing in market share. So the U.S. has two things going there. We're gaining market share in a market that's growing. That's really exciting. And one other note here, China's purchases of beef almost beat out their purchases of U.S. pork. And so pork has had decades of, you know, trying to build that relationship, and beef just kind of came up out of nowhere. and quickly came sort of to the forefront of meat trade with China.
Now, if I'm also correct on this, Chinese purchases of beef, their consumption has been in the past more of a beef bowl type meal. So not something that the U.S. really had an opportunity to get into. But as they grow their appetite, are we finding more of the muscle cuts going in there? Are offals, where are we growing that?
Well, that's a great question, Tony. And from the level of the data that I have access to look at this, we don't have really great granularity as to how they're cutting that out. I suspect it will take us a little bit of time to get that more detailed data available through different trade partners. But you're right. There are changes going on here that are starting to make, significant differences in the Chinese appetite. And one change that I'll mention here is it looks like the upward trend of consuming more pork has paused. And so it's not necessarily that they're eating more meat in total. There's a substitution between pork and beef going on here that's starting to impact these trends as well.
There, I'm sure we could have a 30 to 60 minute conversation on this, digging deeper into the phase one agreement and whether or not that's been beneficial for the U.S. But I hate to spend much more time because we miss out on maybe what's a front burner issue here in the U.S. And that's the inflation story and interest rates. Are you following that as well?
I don't think you can have economics in the name of your business and we talk about these things all the time, but now everyone wants to talk about them. In fact, we've been trying to challenge ourselves. How many times a month are we going to write about this? So yes, it is something we've been thinking a lot about. And one thing that's been overlooked in our opinion is the relationship between those two factors. And what we have seen, in 2021 and even parts of 2022 is we have seen the interest rates you and I will pay, nominal interest rates, remain pretty low, but we have had fairly high inflation. So if we look at those two variables together, there's something called real interest rates, or it's the rate we pay for interest less the inflation rate. Those real interest rates turned to negative in 2021 and in early 2022. And that is the first time we've seen that play out really since the late 1970s. And what real negative interest rates mean is that in the short term, at least, we were able to, inflation outpaced the cost of borrowing money. And that can start to feel like, a free money scenario. And that could actually sort of be a bit of a stimulus to the economy in and of itself. And so we're keeping an eye on that. We don't spend very much time at all in history with very, very low or negative real interest rates. There's a lot of things that could happen. Inflation could come down. Interest rates could go up. There's a combination of those two things could play out. But it's just kind of worth pausing a little bit and thinking about how the low interest rate environment, high inflation environment is starting to impact decisions around financing and purchasing and what we should be doing next.
You know, I know that you've spent time really digging into the 80s, and I'm sure you get a lot of questions. The last time we saw this was late 70s, then will we see history repeat itself, and will we re-enter the turbulence and the volatility that we had in the 80s?
Well, I think we're already entering turbulence and volatility and uncertainty. It's not going to be a repeat of the 1980s by any way. Mark Twain has a great quote that history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And I think one of the rhymes here is we need to be a good student of history to understand what really happened. Not only have we had very low interest rates, we've had very stable interest rates over the last decade. So the Federal Reserve has, through early June at least, has raised short-term interest rates about 75 basis points. And there's all types of headlines saying how that's, the biggest increase in X number of months or years. But let's take a step back and say, what does that look like in across history? If you go back into the early 2000s and in the 90s, we had 12-month periods where the Fed raised short-term rates by 200 basis points or more, or, you know, 2 percentage points relative to, you know, 0.75 percentage points. We've also seen periods where they've dropped short-term rates by 400 basis points. Now, if you want to go back to the 70s and 80s, that period of history is often marked with high double-digit interest rates. But it wasn't just the double-digit interest rates that were going on there. We had a lot of volatility in those interest rates. So there was a period in the 1980s where the Federal Reserve raised short-term interest rates 1,000 basis points, or, you know, 10 percentage points within 12 months. And there's actually a very short period of time there, by several months, where the Federal Reserve is raising rates, and it tripped into the recession, and they have to drop interest rates, you know, almost 800 basis points in a short period of time. So the other element here that keep folks in mind with is we've had low interest rates and stable interest rates. If we are going to enter more uncertainty and more volatility in this space, we need to prepare not only for maybe higher interest rates, but interest rates that are changing much more dramatically than anything we've seen in recent history.
Well, we led off the conversation with the website address. I think it's a great opportunity for us to finish here as well. Agricultural Economic Insights. The acronym is AEI.ag, AEI.ag. Tell us more about what we can experience there, and maybe even something known as Corn Saves America. There's a lot there.
Yeah. So our team works to help decision makers in agriculture. There could be producers, policymakers, input suppliers, sales folks. Anybody working at the, or thinking about the farm level of the U.S. economy can benefit. So we have a free weekly article. There's a newsletter involved. We have two seasons of our podcast, AEI.ag Presents. Season one, Escaping 1980. Season two is Corn Saves America. And, so those are on the free side of things. We also have a premium version of our content, so you can get access to even more insights and more conversations to help you and help your clients or your teammates make better decisions and have better insights as to what's going on within the data. And that's all at AEI.ag.
David, thanks for joining us. Will you come back and see us soon?
Of course, Tony. Always look forward to it.
David Widmar is with Agricultural Economic Insights online, AEI.ag. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
At Livingston Machinery, we say tillage matters. The Sunflower 6631 Series Vertical Tillage Tools feature famous sunflower durability, efficiency, and innovative engineering. Plus, the 6631 features the Stay Sharp serrated blades that will cut through the tough crop residue with ease and penetrate hard soils. Tillage matters, so make the right choice for you. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest, David Widmar with Ag Economic Insights.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with Ag Economic Insights online, AEI.ag.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Joe Outlaw is co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center, testifying on Capitol Hill on Thursday about safety net programs.
Aside from price, weather concerns around the country are still making it where some crops are not even in yet. So the producers that we deal with reach out to me on a daily basis talking about the fact of individual instances of not being able to get different inputs, whether it be chemicals or nutrients. And this is a real challenge, and it's going to prove to be a challenge. Farming is an extremely difficult thing to do, even though they make it look easy at times. Mm-hmm. And if we have any kind of weather blip, we're going to not have the yields. And as was stated earlier, we're going to have even worse price situation than when we thought.